This is Radio Superior 1941, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1941. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now to the KUWS radio studios at the Superior State Teachers College and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the lakes, station KUWS, and your friendly neighborhood announcer, Jack McKenna here. It's a Friday night, October 17th, 1941. Lou Martin is standing by with a 6 o'clock World News Roundup. We've got some great music coming up, too. Rapid Ray's in with the sports, Harriet with community news, and Mr. Personality himself, Gerald Stowe, with the Historical Society, talks about tearing down the old horse trough. Lou is standing by with the Roth's 52nd anniversary sale, including men's dress shirts for just 97 cents and boys' union suits for 89 cents. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. Moscow's outer defenses have been pierced by the Nazis. Japan's emperor has picked a new government. And the U.S. destroyer Kearny has been damaged by a torpedo in what could be the first U.S. military casualties in the European War. Reacting to the news, President Roosevelt said from his family home in Hyde Park, New York, that the USS Kearny was clearly in American defensive waters off Iceland when it was attacked. The president says the Navy is under orders to retaliate. We begin our shortwave radio report with Wes Gallagher on an American warship somewhere in the Atlantic.
This is Wes Gallagher on board a rescue ship heading to the USS Destroyer Kearny. We have not been told the amount of damage this attack caused the Kearny or if there are any injuries. This is the first successful attack on a U.S. warship since the European War started 2 years ago. The Kearny was on patrol 350 miles west and south of American-defended Iceland. The Kearny and all other U.S. ships have been under President Roosevelt's new orders to shoot all Axis submarines, warplanes, or surface raiders. The area off Iceland is considered American defense waters. Officials believe that the attacker was a German U-boat. A U-boat fired two torpedoes in the same area on September 4th, which missed the USS Greer. Until that time, U.S. ships were ordered only to report Axis activity, not to shoot. On September 11th, President Roosevelt directed the Navy to shoot all Axis vessels on sight. The German government has declared the waters off Iceland all the way west to Greenland as a war zone. This rescue ship hopes to reach the Kearny in a few hours. Somewhere on the Atlantic, this is Wes Gallagher calling Germany. Come in, Berlin.
This is the Third Reich, Max Jordan reporting. Anti-American sentiment is high here. It is not known how much longer we will be able to report to you from Berlin. But the German high command does want the world to know its four-month-old invasion of the Soviet Union continues on schedule and successfully. Indeed, military officials are confident that their communist adversary is about to crumble. Today's communique says German armies are smashing through Moscow's deep outer defenses in a great crescent-shaped line of massed tanks and rapid motorized troops while the Luftwaffe bombs the city day and night. Nazi forces say they already have taken a large industrial area of Moscow. Informants say three large and numerous smaller fires have been spotted in Moscow by raiding German pilots. In Berlin, this is Max Jordan calling Soviet Russia. Come in, Moscow.
This is Moscow, Eddie Gilmore reporting. The Soviet government is staying put in Moscow, while many others, especially foreigners, are fleeing to the east. Russian soldiers are fighting savagely against Nazi attackers in this city's west and are apparently holding fast to their battle lines today. German spearheads have broken through at Yazima and Kalinin sectors in Moscow, but we're told those attacks have been broken and no gains are made by today. Heavy Russian artillery fire halted the advance but the situation remains tense. Soviet communiques admit that Germans are pounding at Red Army positions to our west with unabated fury. Official Russian reports tell of vast destruction of men and machines among both the German and Red Armies in fierce combat. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore calling the Far East. Come in, Daryl Berrigan in Japan.
This is Tokyo calling. Your correspondent, Daryl Berrigan here. Emperor Hirohito ordered General Hideki Tojo to form a new government. He'll replace Prince Fumimaro Kanoi. The 57-year-old war minister Tojo is considered a conservative nationalist, one of the army's most brilliant men. Mr. Tojo was selected by a group of six elder statesmen made up of former premiers. After ordering Tojo to form a ministry, Emperor Hirohito ordered Naval Minister Admiral Kashiharu Oikawa to support the new government. Under Japanese procedure, no cabinet can form or remain in power without the approval of the Army and the Navy. Both services are responsible to the Emperor, not the cabinet. Mr. Tojo is called Kamisori, or Razor, because of his keen-edged military mind. He was called to leadership when Prince Kanoi had come under strong national criticism. That criticism was led by the army because of his failure to establish strong relations with the United States without giving up Japan's ambitions to form a great East Asia zone of prosperity. Japan has made no secret of its displeasure with U.S. cargo ships sending materials to Russia through the Sea of Japan. U.S.-Nipponese relations remain a question. Newspapers here say no matter who succeeds Kanoi, it was expected that the new premier would pursue the Chinese war to victory. In Tokyo, this is Daryl Berrigan reporting.
I have this bulletin in from San Francisco. The Navy has just ordered all U.S. merchant ships in Asiatic waters to put into friendly ports immediately. In Washington, the Navy will not comment on this order, except to say that it has to do with the present situation in the Pacific. And this also in from Washington. The House overwhelmingly approved a change in the Neutrality Act. Soon after hearing about the attack on the USS Kearney, members voted 259 to 138 to arm American merchant ships. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:07. Jack McKenna has these words from Roth's department store.
Thank you, Lou, and indeed I do. It's Roth's 52nd anniversary sale. Hot dog, that means a lot of great bargains for you folks, and for me too, for that matter. Like dress shirts. I could use a new dress shirt. They're only $1.47. Can you believe that? And how about this? Mackinaws for boys. $6.95 to $8.50 ordinarily. Now $3.98 to $4.97. Fancy plaids, double-breasted, belted slash and side pockets. Rugs for ladies. Rag rugs, $1.24 a pair. How about that? That's it, Lou. Roth's 52nd anniversary sale for you, me, and everyone else.
Army records show that more than 19,000 men have been drafted from Wisconsin since selective service began 1 year ago. On October the 16th, 1940, men were required to have registered for the draft. 367,000 Wisconsin men between the ages of 21 and 35 have registered. But more than twice that number of men are serving now, with over 45,000 Wisconsin men in the military. Douglas County's October quota of draftees got a big send-off at 9 a.m. this morning from friends and families. Cars were double-parked around the courthouse as they said their goodbyes. 78 draftees boarded buses bound for Eau Claire, where they'll be given their physical exams. 23 men left Washburn by train yesterday as part of Bayfield County's October quota. They, too, are headed for the Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire for examinations. Bayfield Draft Board Clerk James Gordon says the men are led by William Dargy and Edward Farnaday of Iron River. Cleveland Cliffs Iron Company will reopen the oldest mine on the Marquette Range in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. The Princeton Mine has been closed since 1921, and the 550-foot deep shaft has been flooded since 1927. The Princeton Mine first opened in 1890. Superior Police Chief Arthur Buchanan has posted a notice for officers to be on the lookout for juvenile vandals breaking streetlights. Chief Buchanan says an unusual amount of streetlights have been broken. And finally, Jack, we have a different case of a lost dog.
Oh, lost dog stories always make me weepy.
It seems that Mr. A.B. Lang of Banks Avenue doesn't know the dog's name, size, or color, but he does know the age. The dog Mr. Lang is seeking is at least 52 years old.
Let's see now. 52 by 16 by 33 minus 14 times 7. That's 364 years old in dog years.
It's disturbing when you do that and you come out with the correct answer. Anyway, Mr. Lang found a dog tag buried in his backyard, and it's marked Duluth and 1889. Apparently, the dust-to-dust rule has taken the rest of Fido, Jack.
Lou Martin, ladies and gentlemen, not only the best doggone newsman around, but man's best friend, too. Let's check our forecast for this Friday night, October the 17th, 1941. Partly sunny and a little cooler tonight and tomorrow. Not a bad autumn forecast, though. A low tonight of 40 with a high tomorrow of 60 degrees. But then let's get started with the music, friends. Let's kick it off with Gene Krupa, his drums, and Let Me Off Uptown on the Martin and McKenna Show.
What do you mean, Joe? My name's Roy.
Well, come here, Roy, and get groovy. You been uptown?
No, I ain't been uptown, but I've been around.
You mean to say you ain't been uptown?
No, I ain't been uptown. What's uptown?
If it's pleasure you're about, and you feel like stepping out, all you've got to shout is, let me off uptown. If it's rhythm that you feel, then it's nothing to conceal. All you've got to spill is, let me off uptown. Ribs joys, juke joys, hemp joys. Where could a fella go to top it? If you want to pitch a ball, you can't afford a hole. All you've got to call is, let me off uptown.
Anita, oh Anita. Say, I feel something.
What you feel, Roy? The heat?
No, it must be that uptown rhythm. I feel like blowing.
Well, blow, Roy, blow.
Yes, siree, Bob, that's a hot one by Gene Krupa on his drums. A good swing-a-ling called Let Me Off Uptown on station KUWS. Hiya, Lou.
It's time for our lovely community editor.
Wait, wait! I've got important information. Life and death stuff.
Station engineer Joe Gardonio, good listeners. I'm afraid you'll have to wait. We have Harriet, then the Historical Society, and Ray is in with sports. You'll have to wait, Joe.
But this could change civilization as we know it, and it affects Superior directly. Oh, it's about those broken street lamps. It's a clue to the biggest event in our lives.
Perhaps we'll have a minute or two at the end of the show. If you please, just take a seat over there.
Oh, sure. Send me to the just shut up and sit down seat. That's usually where you send the draft board guy.
Community editor Harriet Farrig has some very important tidings, too. Good evening, Hare.
Hare? Aren't you getting a little familiar, Lou?
Downright bold for him.
Pay him no mind, Lewis.
Everybody else around here has one-syllable names. Jack, Ray, Lou, Joe. I just wanted you to feel like one of the gang.
We have news from our ladies all around northern Wisconsin. Elna Erickson of Poplar says the Bong family has been very busy. They spent last weekend in Webster, accompanied by Mr. and Mrs. Lawrence Lindahl. Then Mr. Carl Bong took daughters Nelda and Geraldine, son Bud, and Bud's friend Marvin Peterson on a drive up the North Shore. All this was topped off with a birthday party for Bud. He turned 15. Their oldest brother, Richard, is in the Air Corps. Miss Millicent June Schmidt, daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Martin Schmidt of Agenda, was crowned Queen of the Butternut Community Fair last weekend. And Miss Vera Couture reports that the cable PTA met Monday. They had a group sing and then a humorous debate. The topic? Husbands should help their wives with the housework. I'm told the men disagreed, but lost the debate.
I agree that husbands should chip in around the house.
Well, that's because you're so thoughtful, Lewis.
Yeah, and you're also a traitor to the male race. That's outlandish, the very idea. That's just too radical to think about.
You're my red-haired radical, Lewis.
Why, thanks, Hare.
On with the music. This one's sure to cheap out, Lou. Here's Marlena Dietrich and Falling in Love Again on the Martin and McKenna Outlandish Radio Show.
Falling in love again, never wanted to. What am I to do? I can't help it. Love's always been my game, play it how I may. I was made that way, I can't help it. Men cluster to me like moths around the flame, and if their wings burn, I know I'm not to blame. Falling in love again, never wanted to. What am I to do? I can't help it. What am I?
it's Marlena Dietrich and Falling in Love Again on Station KUWS.
Now let's welcome Douglas County Historical Society Curator, Mr. Gerald Snow, to our studio. Good evening, sir.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Martin. It's a sad day for us today. Yes, the city fathers have decided to put an end to two pieces of our city's great history. I'm speaking about the two remaining horse troughs. Yes, they're on Tower Avenue in the South End and Ogden Avenue.
I understand the city made its decision because the iron troughs have been dry for 3 years, since 1938.
Yes, but that is so short-sighted. Soon, children will not remember those fine days when these 3-foot-high pedestal troughs would slake the thirst of dray horses and carriage horses. It was a quieter, slower time. My favorite, neighbors would meet as old Bessie would satiate her thirst. I recall, yes, ladies and gentlemen in their finery would greet the milkman in his milk wagon or the iceman in his ice wagon. Yes, they waited as their steeds lapped at the iron trough.
There he goes again with that I recall stuff.
He means, of course, since you're only, what, 30 or 35 years old, Mr. Stowe, that this is what old-timers would tell you?
Yes, of course. Yes, the Ogden trough was a particularly popular one. Sometimes there would be a line of horses and carriages waiting. But back then they understood there was no hurry. Not like today.
They can't do that. Those troughs are priceless.
Yes, it's good to see you so indignant, yes.
Yes, and it's also unusual. Why do you have these sudden pangs to preserve history?
Why, it's the end of a tradition.
Yes, the end of a tradition.
It's the end of an era.
Yes, the end of an era.
We won't be able to send some gullible stranger down to the 7th and Ogden anymore to Iron Mike's.
Yes, I mean, Iron Mike's?
Oh, sure. Well, that's the oldest joke around town. Some new guy comes along, you send him over to Iron Mike's for a drink.
We always say the first drink is on the house.
You know, other radio station newsmen get to do their interviews without quips from the rest of the staff. Thank you, Douglas County Museum Curator Gerald Stowe.
Yes, I get it now. I haven't laughed so hard in decades.
In memory of Iron Mike's, here's Bob Chester and his orchestra with the singing of Dolores O'Neill and We Three, My Echo, My Shadow, and Me, on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Until eternity,
Bob Chester and his orchestra, and we three, my echo, my shadow, and me, on Station KUWS. Hiya, Ray.
I've got something important to say.
Yes, right after Rapid Ray Paulson gives us the sporting news.
Hey, maybe we can all head down to Iron Mike's after work.
I hear the first race on the house.
Well, now that we've got that off our chest, the Green Bay Packers coach Curly Lambeau put his footballers through some tough drills today, getting ready to play the Cleveland Rams on Sunday. Coach Lambeau will use his first-year men, including Minnesota star Bill Johnson. He says he wants the rookies to know the Green Bay Packer way by the time they play the Chicago Bears November 2nd. And fans of the sporting news, tonight's an historic night in high school football. Coach Harry Conley, Central High Vikings, will face an invasion from the Far East, East High's Orientals, in a tradition that dates back to 1915. That first contest ended in a 0-0 score. But, folks, when the Doughboys returned from France in 1919, the armistice ended between the City of Superior High Schools. That's when the Orphans pounded the Orientals 115-0. Enter Coach Simmons in 1925, who guided the Orientals to a 20-10 victory, and the rivalry has been close ever since. Coach Harry Conley began his tenure with Central in 1929. And in Conley's first crosstown contest, his Orphans beat East 24-0. Well, most of us remember that Central changed its name to the Vikings a few years later. The rivalry went on, and Central usually won, even when future national footballer Tuffy Lehmans played for East. So tonight, fans, the galloping ghosts of those contests will be at Wade Memorial Field. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport.
You're the best, old buddy. Hey, Joe, you're up next.
Oh, well, about time.
Right now, after we hear the number one hit from Charlie Barnett and Cherokee on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Hey! Thank you.
Cherokee with Charlie Barnett on Station KUWS. Now, Lou Martin has these news flashes.
Hey!
Hey, from Moscow, the Columbia Broadcasting System reports that Premier Joseph Stalin still is in Moscow and has decided against evacuating eastward. From Berlin, authorized Germans say that they cannot comment on whether one of their submarines attacked the USS Kearney, except to say that there was no indication that the German Navy was involved. All right, KUWS engineer Joe Gardoni.
Well, engineer in charge, if you please. Now, well, picture this. Streetlights blown out. Warring nations closing in on the United States. That all adds up to just one thing.
Oh, no.
The death ray conspiracy is alive and well.
Bingo. It's probably an electrical surge created by errant experiments conducted underground by sinister sources designing laser beams so powerful that it boggles the mind.
I agree with the last part of that.
So, it is the death ray at work?
Well, what else could explain this rash of streetlights mysteriously blowing out,
You mean besides kids throwing rocks at the bulbs?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, kids are a pretty convenient explanation for you, aren't they? But get your head out of the sand and think, man. Now, it's no secret that terrific high-power surges from beneath the earth blow out streetlights. You think this is all just a coincidence,
It isn't a...
See, it's got you flustered.
It isn't a coincidence. It's a gang of delinquents whose parents need to give them a good talking to.
Oh, sure. Convenient. The old hoodlum kids thing. A neat little cover-up if ever I heard it. And don't think Chief Buchanan isn't in on this, turning our attention away from what should become perfectly obvious. A proton destructor ray beamed through the Earth's outer crust across the ocean to disrupt electrical transference equipment in an enemy land like Germany or Japan.
As obvious as the nose on your face.
And don't forget the 52-year-old dog.
1889 dog tags have to do with anything.
Pieces of the puzzle, man. Pieces of the puzzle. Well, don't be so naive, Abe. All of the answers are in the very newscast you read today. It all adds up. The dog, the great number of broken streetlights, the reopened underground Princeton mine.
They're all unconnected news stories.
Were they? Think, man. Russia's about to collapse. Japan and Germany will link up in Asia. America's isolated. Most of our allies defeated. These are desperate times, and that calls for desperate measures.
And desperate minds.
I kind of like where this is going.
Precisely. Thus, the proton conversion theory, or if you like, the death ray. My guess is they're pretty close to the solution and are testing it. Where? 550 feet underground in an isolated place like Michigan's Upper Peninsula. They shoot the ray, collapsing protons in some faraway objective, but not as far away as they thought. So it disintegrates said old dog in Superior, one that, mind you, has lived for 52 years. Not an easy dog to kill, if you think about it. It all fits. No coincidence, just facts. I figured it would be a 1 in 10 billion chance for all these things to happen at once, unless there's an explanation like this one. Doubters are simply people who don't want to hear the truth.
I think that I'll head down to Iron Mike's right now.
Thanks, Joe. Keep us posted.
Well, certainly.
Stay tuned now, folks, for information, please. And Friday Night Playhouse. We'll be back same time, same place, on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and Joe isn't right. For Lou Martin, then, this is Jack McKenna, wishing one and all a pleasant good night.
It's positively mind-boggling.
Iron Mike sounds pretty good. Well, Lou, wait up.
Hey, can I come? Hey, I'll get the first round.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1941. An original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Duke Skourich, Don Hansen, Don Mason, Joel Anderson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1941 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.